Ryan Seacrest here. When you have a busy schedule, it's important to maximize your downtime. One of the best ways to do that is by going to ChumbaCasino.com. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino games like spin slots, bingo, and solitaire that you can play for free for a chance to redeem some serious prizes. So hop on to ChumbaCasino.com now and live the Chumba life. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
We all know that owning a small business means you wear many hats, but sometimes you really need an extra pair of hands. Upwork is how good companies find great and trusted freelance talent. With more than 2 decades of experience, with the simple and ambitious goal of pioneering a better way of working, companies at every stage turn to Upwork to get things done and find more flexibility in staffing key projects and initiatives. They access a global marketplace filled with top talent in IT, web dev, marketing, and more. Posting a job on Upwork is easy. With no cost to join, you can register, browse freelancer profiles, and get help drafting a job post or even book a consultation. From there, you connect with freelancers that get you and can easily hire them and take your business to the next level. Visit Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to post your job for free and connect with top talent ready to help your business grow. That's UPWORK.com. Upwork.com.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back into another episode of The Lawyer You Know, and we are well within the defense case at this point, maybe nearing the end. So I'm bringing my dad back on to see how he thinks Karen Reed's defense team has handled the presentation of their case in chief. What does he think is going to happen, right? Because the defense is going to be ending soon. The Commonwealth is going to be getting their chance to rebut. Where does he see the chances of a not guilty verdict for Karen Reed in this case, or where does he see the chance of a guilty verdict for the Commonwealth, and have they proven their case and overcome all the reasonable doubts created and highlighted by the defense? We'll get all that and more right now. All right, Dad. So we are here and we are talking Karen Reed. I think it's week seven. I can't even remember what week it is at this point, but it is. Last time we talked was basically the beginning of the defense's case in chief. They had one witness last week, and they've called 6 or 7 witnesses this week. The presentation of a big bulk of their case. While we are recording this, ARCA is on the stand talking about creating different experiments, whether the glass hit the taillight, whether John O'Keefe's head hit the taillight, his arm hit the taillight, his center mass of his body hit the taillight. And we can presume they are going to explain how their opinion is this is not consistent. This taillight damage is not consistent with the injuries sustained by John O'Keefe. So we're not going to focus a ton on ARCA today during this podcast. We'll talk a lot more about that next week. But the defense presented the bulk of their case in chief this week. Overall, what have you thought about their strategy not to call Higgins, not to call Proctor, not to call the Alberts, not to call McCabe's, and instead rely on other witnesses to get a lot of that information in, and presenting to the judge the opportunity to have this missing witness instruction where they can give a negative inference to the Commonwealth for not calling witnesses that were available to the Commonwealth, friendly to the Commonwealth, and they chose not to call them?
Well, I think that they, first off, we're making a presumption that they're not going to call them.
They can still call them.
And I think it's a reasonable presumption because apparently Karen Reed went out to the press and said the case may be over by Tuesday. And we think, I mean, ARCA is going to be on there for 2 days. We know that.
I would think.
For sure. Yeah. So it looks very reasonable that they're not going to call them. I think it's a good strategy. I don't think they have anything to gain by calling them. And I know
by calling Proctor, you don't think they have anything to gain?
No, because you know why? I think they
totally
can still
disagree.
Argue. I think they can still argue Proctor. As we go through the witnesses today, I think they can still argue Proctor. I think they can
still. Of course, they can still argue him. But I mean, to get out the fact that he wrote those texts, when he wrote them, where he was, his relationship with everybody involved, people offering to buy him gifts, to him telling him to buy them for his wife because of this presentation. I mean, and again, you didn't watch the first trial, you know, all the way through. You just kind of hit the highlights or the clips. But Proctor being on the stand was devastating for the Commonwealth, the first trial. But I do think that, I guess, what you're saying is keep it a little bit simpler. Keep out the stuff that they could, that the Commonwealth could get out during cross-examination of all these friendly witnesses for them. But man, I understand, and I actually agree with you with some of the Alberts and McCabe's. But Proctor, I would absolutely call. Higgins, I'd be 50-50 on. I think you could convince me to call him or not call him because he destroyed his phone at a military base and all this sketchy stuff with butt dials and where he was in the morning. They did get some of it out. So you're saying you think the limited amount of information they've gotten out, by the way, she limited their closing argument to 1 hour last trial. So how much are they really going to be able to get into Proctor and all these witnesses that they didn't call in 1 hour with all the other stuff they want to talk about?
Well, I think the 1 hour is a ridiculous limit, but keep in mind, they're going to be able to say things like, he didn't mention Proctor in his opening statement. We know why he didn't mention him now. And
I get that.
You know, they're going to be able to say a lot of things about Proctor that if he took the stand, you know, there may be some explanations, but there's no explanation now for calling Proctor.
And I understand that. I understand that with a lot of the witnesses. And I understand not letting a lot of the witnesses explain themselves. Proctor cannot explain himself. He was terminated for bias, for conduct unbecoming of an officer, and for text messages that the judge is allowing to come into this trial. So you have that. You have his text messages. You have him as a person. I mean, it's just.
But if a jury is not now, or at least after ARCA, if we presume ARCA really does a great job, if a jury isn't convinced about not guilty after that, Proctor is not going to change their mind. Calling Proctor isn't going to make the difference between guilt and innocence. I don't think so.
I think Proctor would absolutely be a sticking point for multiple jurors back there if they're arguing, right? I agree with you. Maybe he's not going to be but I mean, you could say that about so many little details in the case, but right. Maybe he's not going to be the overwhelming thing that flips jurors from one side to the other. But if it's 8-4 again, where four people think not guilty, I think Proctor is absolutely a sticking point for some of them being like, that guy, no way. I don't want that guy investigating cases I'm on. We can't reward this horrible investigation by the cops. I do think he would be a sticking point for some of the juries. Maybe he's not going to flip jurors, but I think he could really make certain jurors entrenched in the not guilty camp.
Well, I think, I think you're taking a risk you don't need to take because if that jury doesn't believe she's not guilty after ARCA, then you're just taking a risk you don't need to take.
Well, then I can't wait to hear what you think about some of these other witnesses that, you know, were a risk and I don't think really brought anything to the table for the defense. Let's start with, I guess we'll start with Diamantis, who was Proctor's friend, who they got the text messages in. So the defense gets them entered. The defense doesn't read them. Hank Brennan reads them on cross, takes most of the sting out, reads them in a grouping of extra texts that weren't necessarily read the first trial, and even abbreviates some of the nastier words used by Proctor describing Karen Reed. What did you think about that presentation?
Well, first of all, let's remember Diamantis probably is Greek.
We like him.
And we like him. So we do have a bias toward him. But here's what Brennan has done. And I tell you, it seems like, I don't know why. Why is Brennan today, now with Diamantis, owning Proctor's terribleness, being such a bad guy and a bad investigator? And why wouldn't they mention him in opening statement? Brennan had to know this was going to happen down through the trial. So why not own him in opening statement like he did in Diamantis? I think that his cross was right. If he's going to go after and say, look, you know, Proctor is just a bad apple. We know he's a bad apple, but people shouldn't be able to get away with killing somebody because you have a bad apple. And he did. He owned him. He brought out the fact that he was fired for his texts. He didn't do right. But he also got into the fact that he was not fired for not planting evidence.
Right.
He was able to get that question in. But he was able to paint Proctor as a bad apple. He was fired for it. Ladies and gentlemen, the police took care of this guy. We fired this guy. This guy was a bad apple, but my gosh, you can't let Karen Reed get away with a crime because we have a bad apple, a man who has low morals, a man who has, let's face it, I never put anything in writing that I wouldn't want the public to see. And so I cannot believe this guy was so stupid. I think that he owned Proctor in this, and that's what he should have been doing during this whole trial.
And he got to say he was fired because of these text messages.
Right.
Because he was saying these gross things and despicable things about Karen Reed. He also owned it a little bit with Yuri Bukenik on the stand about Proctor getting fired and why he was fired. So I think Brennan just, that's kind of his style, was to ignore the bad stuff and then deal with it as it came out. And you're proving my point. I thought Brennan did a great job owning Proctor's text. It went as good as you could have gone. It's never going to be good. You don't want your lead investigator to have said these things. But because he did, as a lawyer, you've got to be able to react to it. And I thought Brennan did better than I expected, which is, again, just another reason why I would call Proctor. But yeah, I thought it was effective for the defense, of course, because those text messages are shocking and despicable. But was it as effective as it could have been?
Yeah, I think it gave Brennan something to argue about Proctor later on. And that's what Brennan's purpose was. So, again, I think Brennan did as good as you, like you said, as good as you could do with this guy. And I think he actually got some points. Again, Proctor is, there's nothing good about Proctor.
Which is why I
don't. Right. So you've got to own him.
Yeah.
And if you own him, then you're able to dismiss him later on. And the jury says, you know what? The prosecution brought out that Proctor was a bad apple. Prosecution brought out that he was fired. The prosecution brought these emails to our attention. So I really think Brennan, I'll give him a good B plus. I know you've been scoring some of these guys, so I'd give him a B plus.
And I think that's also a big difference between the last trial. Lally did not own Proctor. Lally made it seem like Proctor was a great guy. He just made one little mistake that he apologized for on the stand, and he was still a cop at that point. So we'll see if you know, looking like all these cops pointed at the bad cop and got rid of the bad cop and he's not with us, get him out of here. Is that going to help the Commonwealth, since that's what it looks like this time, using his termination as a positive instead of a negative, which is what, you know, lawyers have to do with their strategy during trials. And that's definitely what Brennan did with him, which leads us to our next witness, who I think was, is that Dever?
Yes.
All right. Can't wait to hear what you think of her.
I want to make sure it's Dever, right? Not Dever.
Not Dever. Don't say Dever. Dever. Dever, not Dever.
All right. So Dever, I tell you what, I've never in my life seen anybody testify like this guy, especially like her, like a police officer. Now, a civilian, maybe they would have said something like this, but how can a police officer, I'm trying to remember her quote was something like she had a false memory.
I created a false memory, something like that.
Right. I created a false memory. You're a police officer. I think she did put this in a report, the false memory.
No, she didn't do a report. She didn't do a report.
I thought that she made
she did no report. Writing. Nobody interviewed her. No, she did no report.
All right.
Because she said this was a random shift for me 3 years ago. I barely even remember what I'm talking about. Yet there's a lot of details in that false memory.
Right. But she does a false memory about seeing Higgins and the chief standing there. And then all of a sudden she doesn't. She didn't see him standing there. And not only did she see him standing there, but I believe she categorized what their movements were and where they went around the vehicle. And all of a sudden, that's all a false memory.
Well, I think the issue was some of the timelines made her think that the time she said was wrong too, which the defense did not dig into that they really could have to prove if she was really wrong and if this timeline really was nefarious. And I think that it was more so the timeline didn't fit perfectly. But just there was a part of the camera that cut that was very sketchy from the Sally Port that looked like it was Chief Berkowitz, and the defense already had that. And I think they're trying to kind of maybe push that together, but I don't think it really lined up with her timeline of her false memory either, which is why she recanted. It was overall very confusing testimony to me. I don't think it was overly beneficial to the defense personally. I would never have called her. Choosing to call her and not call Proctor to me was a very strange decision. What did you think about the fact that they called her? Like, I don't think she was a help to the Commonwealth at all. She was completely not credible, but.
Well, unless you want to continue with the theory to the jury that, you know, this is just all contrived by law enforcement. Here she does. She gives a statement that is beneficial to the defense. And then she says it's a false memory. So she changes her testimony. You think about the state's witnesses or the Commonwealth's witnesses. How many of them changed their testimony, including during the trial, including expert witnesses, in order to help the Commonwealth convict Aaron Reed? Mm-hmm. There's going to be a long list of changes in testimony and in memory and in calculations that all went one way, and that is convict Karen Reed. Mm-hmm. So I think that they may have tried to, Again, I don't think it was on purpose, because I think that they didn't like her testimony. That's the feeling I got from the, from the direct examination. They did not like
everybody. Everybody was online is like, A plus, she was a great witness for the defense, home run. I don't think the lawyers felt that way during the testimony.
They did not like her testimony. You can tell by the way they questioned her. You can tell by how they handled her as a witness. They did not like her. They were not happy with her.
Not only did they not like her, obviously they didn't like her, but I agree. You said it. I haven't said that yet, but that is such a big thing I noticed, is they were not happy with how her testimony went. And I think they're probably never going to admit this, but if they could go back, they wouldn't call. Everyone goes through things from time to time, and sometimes you need a little help outside of yourself, but finding a therapist can be really difficult, especially finding a therapist that accepts insurance. That's where most online therapy platforms fall short. Many don't work with insurance at all, which means you're stuck paying the full cost out of pocket. But Rula does things differently. They partner with over 100 insurance plans, making the average copay $15 per session. That's real therapy from licensed professionals at a price that actually makes sense. And Rula isn't just affordable. The experience is tailored around you. Other online therapy platforms might match you with the first available provider, whether or not they're the right fit. But Rula considers your goals, preferences, and background to provide you a curated list of licensed in-network therapists who are actually aligned with what you need. Thousands of people are already using Rula to get affordable, high-quality therapy that's actually covered by insurance. Visit Rula.com/LYK to get started. After you sign up, you'll be asked how you heard about them. So please support our show and let them know we sent you. That's Rula.com/LYK. You deserve mental health care that works with you, not against your budget.
No, but they have now. So now they have to go with the scenario. Look at all the witnesses that changed their testimony in order to convict Karen Reed.
Oh, yeah.
And obviously changed their testimony. And they're going to be, it's going to be a long list. What are they going to, I forget, there's a movie they talk about, the list is long and distinguished.
Yeah.
That people that changed their testimony during the course of this trial in order to convict Karen Reed. And she is definitely one of them. And then seeing the commissioner, there's a lot of things about her testimony that just stunk. And so I really believe, and she looked, I don't want to say, kind of a young, innocent law enforcement officer.
A rookie cop that the commissioner called into his office to make sure she did the right thing. Wink, wink. And yeah. I think it was a little clunky the way it came out, but I do think Jackson is going to be able to tie it up in closing. I do think she will be mentioned in closing. I think she will fit with the narrative of the cops making sure this went a certain way, but it's going to be really hard to convince me that the defense was happy they called her when she got off the stand.
Yeah. And, it's statements like my career's on the line, those kind of things. Those kind of
statements. Definitely good nuggets.
There were nuggets, but there were surprises. They were not what they planned on. And so they have to change how they're going to handle her in closing.
And as a defense lawyer who has probably been called a bully before, as a defense lawyer, you still don't like for witnesses to stay on the stand, to say on the stand, you called me before my testimony and threatened me and said, I'm going to get you with perjury if you don't tell that same lie on the stand, even after I told you it wasn't true. That's not good when that comes out in front of the jury.
It's not, but I got to tell you that I don't think it was that damaging. I know it sounded dramatic, but think about it. It really wasn't. And what they said to her was, you testified this way.
I agree. As lawyers, we get that. But as people, I understand completely what he did. I've done it myself. I've done it in depositions, especially. Like, we've all done that. Like, you realize you're under oath. You realize if you lie, that could be perjury. You realize with the penalty of perjury, like, we've all done that. But and if this was the only witness that the Commonwealth had that with, that'd be one thing. But it's her. It's Dr. Russell. They say they're telling her what to say. It is other Commonwealth witnesses. It's Lucky Laughlin getting outside pressure. It's ARCA, who they're feeding stuff to and telling them what to say and changing their testimony. So they're able to stack up that this defense team is doctoring these witnesses, is telling these witnesses what to say. And if they don't say what they like, they threaten them until they come into court and they say what these witnesses want. And Dever's the only one that stood up to them. Like, to me, there's definitely a theme being created by Brennan with these questions, and I think it's going to continue with ARCA.
You do. You have a point that it could continue that way, but again, no one's more intimidating than the prosecutor, than the Commonwealth.
And that's because they can actually charge you with stuff, as they are charging people with things on the outside of this case.
Right. So, she was a surprise, and they were unhappy with her. And like we said this before, trials are living, breathing things. you have to make adjustments during the course of the trial because things happen that you're not ready for. Her testimony was a surprise to them, and they're going to have to just make an adjustment.
And I will say, I agree with you, but that shows Alan Jackson's skill because his redirect, I thought, was awesome of her. The direct went kind of off the rails a little bit because of her. The cross was good by Brennan because it was easy. And the redirect, which was very difficult after that cross, I thought it was an A+. I thought he did a great job getting it back on track, focusing on that meeting with the commissioner. He focused on the stuff that could get them back to their theme of the thin blue line or whatever, where they all kind of protect each other. So I think he adapted really well in her testimony because I agree with you. I don't think he was excited about how that direct went.
Yeah, and he did bring out that they can't charge somebody with perjury. Only the Commonwealth can charge somebody with perjury.
And he knows because he was a prosecutor for a long
time. That's right. So that threat was an empty threat that she was talking about.
Riley Herbst from 2311 Racing here. And you know what grinds my gears? Waiting for coffee. But instead of counting frappes and lattes, I fire up Chumba Casino. No apps, no fuss, just fun social casino games to pass the time. By the time my coffee's ready,
order for Riley.
I've already taken a few victory laps. Next time you're stuck waiting, make it entertaining. Play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go big time on a fancy water bottle with ultra-titanium alloy metal. You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water. But you're getting it anyway. Because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save big time. For water bottles. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
Mm-hmm. Then we get to Sergeant Barros, Guyton PD, who I felt was pretty much a haymaker for the defense, who describes exactly the damage he saw at Karen Reed's parents' house before it went to the Sally Port and in Canton PD's possession. It was a dollar bill sized damage, definitely different than the photos that he's seen now after the cops had the vehicle. What did you think about Barros' testimony? The cross was really good, but what did you think about his direct?
Didn't Russell testify next?
It was Barros, then Russell, I thought.
I thought it was my notes said Russell, but
right. I can look it up.
I can adjust. It's a living, breathing thing. I can
there you go.
I can do that.
I could be wrong. Maybe it was Russell next.
Who
do you want to go? Let's just do Barros. Barros is simpler, I think. So let's do Barros, then Russell. I think you're right. I think Russell was next, but let's talk about Barros first.
Okay.
I don't remember because I know I remember thinking the dichotomy of Barros versus Dever, right? An honest cop versus potentially a dishonest cop.
The only thing I really noticed about Barros is that Barros he's a police officer. Theoretically, he knows how to testify and he knows, what kind of cross he's going to get. I don't think he did very well on the cross-examination. I think that Barros could have done better. Most police officers will say, that's what I believe. Yes. They won't admit, well, I have kind of a bad memory. My memory may not be so good. He said things like that normal police officers won't say when they're testifying about a fact that they're testifying to.
Yeah. None of it was the important facts. It was like, was he shown something during his first trial? He wasn't saying his memory's bad about, the damage done to the taillight, but I agree. Hank Brennan did a good job of making it seem like he was saying his entire memory. And if you compare that to Lucky Loughran, who really battled back and pushed back when Brennan was telling him he misremembered, there was a big difference. I agree. People were sending me afterwards, which the jury's not going to know this, but I guess Barros got in a really serious car accident and he did have a head injury where a drunk driver hit him while he was on duty. I don't know if that's necessarily true, but maybe he does actually have memory issues. I don't know. But his direct was so solid. I also think that he was very honest and non-combative, and his demeanor was very good on cross. He wasn't trying to battle Brennan. But when Brennan, even on cross, said, well, so your memory's not that good, he goes, I remember what the taillight looked like, and that's not it. And Jackson brought up, he's like, absolutely different. The taillight looked absolutely different. And if the taillight looked different, the case is over for the Commonwealth.
And he did say he never saw Proctor manipulate the taillight. I mean, I thought Brennan did a decent job of cross-examining him.
I agree, but I still think Barros was having a cop say the taillight was not as damaged, I think was pretty. You didn't think he was that dramatic? I thought he was incredible.
Oh, no, I think he was. But I think that Brennan did a pretty good job of putting some doubt on whether or not you know, he really had a good memory of that taillight. That's the impression when I finished the whole testimony, impression I got was, yes, it was good testimony, but you know, Brennan put some doubt in whether or not he really remembered it.
So I think Brennan did a really good cross, right? I've said that a million times, but that type of cross to me, sometimes I think you get more lawyer points from lawyers because we know how difficult it is to cross a witness like that. And if you can get him to admit some things like that, it seems like it's a really good cross to lawyers. But to lay people who see a cop that's not connected to Proctor and MSP and Canton PD and Berkowitz and Higgins and all these people in the Alberts, and you see a cop like that get up there with nothing to gain or lose and says, absolutely different, I think that's probably more impactful than it is to a lawyer being like, ooh, that was a good cross-examination. I think we probably give more lawyer points than a jury would give on that cross. That's just my feel.
And I admit, when I heard his direct testimony, I thought it was a slam dunk. I mean, I thought this was a really, this is a triple. he really did. But again, I think that Brennan did made some points with his memory. But I do think that, yes, his testimony is really important. It's going to be a great argument for the defense.
Yeah. Okay, then Dr. Russell. What were your thoughts on Dr. Russell?
I loved her.
Everybody loved her. I mean, she's just universally loved.
First off, great. She looks like a mom. She doesn't really look like, a person you're going to fight with. She looks like a mom or a grandma, so she got that appearance. I don't know where you could find an expert that had what this one had. She was a cop who was certified in accident reconstruction or something.
Minor, rudimentary, but still.
Something like that, right. So she was a cop. She is board certified in emergency medicine, board certified in forensic pathology, and she has seen hundreds upon hundreds, maybe thousands of dog bites and car accidents and all this stuff in the emergency room. She's a star. And not only that, they didn't reach out to her. She reached out to the state attorney, the prosecutors in Los Angeles, if I remember right, to say, you know what, she saw this. And so they put her in touch with da-da-da-da and got to Jackson. But, so she has nothing to really gain that much from it. Now, Brennan tried to cross. It wasn't his fault, but it was a terrible cross.
I think it was his fault because he has one speed. He only can cross-examine one way, and it's to be harsh. And when you're trying to be harsh and sarcastic with a witness like this, it is your fault when the cross is bad. Now, sometimes that cross can go really well, which I think he's a good lawyer. But I think that just his style of cross did not mesh well with the cop, ER doctor, medical examiner, one of one resume, basically, to testify about. Because by the way, in case people don't know this, most car accidents with serious injuries, where do they go? The emergency room. So she's probably seen more car accidents than the vast majority of doctors in California. And also, Jackson asked another witness. He said, I'm from Los Angeles, right? So they didn't necessarily say who the connection was with. But now they know, if the jury's putting it together, Russell talked to a prosecutor in LA who has a relationship with Jackson. That could give Jackson additional credibility if he's that good of friends with prosecutors in LA that they're going to help him out getting an expert witness.
Well, here's my fault with Brennan. He asked too many questions.
She was up there way too long.
Yes.
He should have recognized it.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. We're both talking over each other.
Go ahead.
He should have recognized that this is not someone he's going to gain points with. And he should have sat down after he made a couple points. He gave her too many opportunities to bang him. Too many open-ended questions that gave her those opportunities. And he's a better lawyer than that. He should have recognized, I need to leave this woman alone as soon as I can. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, it's fine. It's fine. He made the whole theory of a dog bite to me so much more legitimate the way that he crossed. And like, well, are you sure? Are you kind of sure? Is it a large animal or is it a dog? It's like, so now we're trying to figure out which animal made these scratches and bites. For the defense, it doesn't matter what animal made them. If an animal made them, it's not guilty. And Brennan did way too much parsing out of that in the minor inconsistencies in her testimony. Gave her the opportunity to say, I've become more and more confident every time I look at this case that this is from a dog bite or scratch.
And he also gave her the opportunity to explain some things
big time
that he did, that she didn't do in direct. To explain, for instance, he talked about the underbite. He thought he'd have an opportunity there to get her because there wasn't a bite underneath, you know, because it's a vice, as he thought. She explained that away beautifully. And who can question her? She's seen 500 of these, and it doesn't always happen that way. Mm-hmm. He gave her the opportunity to explain over and over again the depth of the, you know, he goes, oh, yeah. And Brennan also did some screwy things with his cross-examination. I thought that he really looked bad when he tried to misinterpret or say the wrong words from the autopsy when they talked about the depth and the no depth or no punctures.
Yeah.
I thought that, you know, he wasn't reading that autopsy accurately, and it was obvious he wasn't. But she handled that tremendously, in a tremendous job. She also, let me see, some other things she did is, she was able to explain why we have the difference between a glass cutting the hand versus the teeth cutting versus a dog, where she explained the patterns totally. I mean, anybody, it was totally logical, common sense. The jury understood exactly what she said. So she was able to do all that and take care of it all. I mean, she did a tremendous job. She also talked about Welcher, and he tried to cross-examine her on Welcher's report. She said, I'm consistent with his report. And then the redirect that I thought that, was Alessi? Am I pronouncing that right?
Alessi.
The Alessi redirect was really good. It was short. They just took Welcher's report. They talked about how Welcher said a variety of things could have caused it, and it was undetermined. And she said, yes, that's totally consistent with my report.
That's what Brennan was trying to, make it sound like that report said it was a car accident. And unless he's like, no, it was not a car accident. Yeah. He didn't know what it was either, which is reasonable doubt. I love a good protein bar, and I love sugary cereal. So Magic Spoon is such a great option for me because every serving of Magic Spoon high protein cereal has 13 grams of protein and zero sugar, 4 grams of net carbs. And they come in nostalgic flavors like fruity, cocoa, and frosted, but they also have high protein treats that are crispy, crunchy, airy, and an easy way to get 12 grams of protein on the go. They come in mouthwatering flavors like marshmallow, my kid's favorite, chocolate peanut butter, and dark chocolate. Both are great on the go, pre or post-workout, or as a midnight snack, which is how I usually like to get my cereal. I don't eat it as breakfast. I eat it as more of a dessert. So you can get $5 off your next order at magicspoon.com/LYK or look for Magic Spoon on Amazon or in your nearest grocery store. That's magicspoon.com/LYK for $5 off.
Yeah, so Now, one thing that did happen during the questioning of the cross was about the DNA. And the only reason I'm bringing that up is I know a lot of your listeners disagree with me about Alessi, and his style.
Oh.
But his motion for mistrial was just so over the top. You've moved for a mistrial. Fine. The jury's not there. You're moving for a mistrial. What?
Cameras
were there. You move for a mistrial. Judge, we move for a mistrial. The judge rules on the law. But this wasn't just a motion for mistrial. It was a motion that was a strong and vigorous motion for mistrial. And he just went crazy moving for it. And it had no effect on whether he's going to get a decision one way or the other. I don't understand why he would do it that way. Again, that's just his style, and just our styles differ, I guess.
It's just, it's just the way he does it. And I think it's really effective at certain times. I don't think it makes a difference there one way or the other, but I do think the public loves it. And we know that a lot of things have been done in this case for some public perception from both sides. And we're going to talk about that more when we get to Lucky Loughran. I did think it was wrong for her to let him get into that and basically testify to the evidentiary analysis of this dog DNA without giving the defense the opportunity to cross-examine a DNA expert on whether or not it was done correctly or what that actually means, absence of dog DNA. and he was able to just ask her those questions as if it was facts and evidence, I thought that was inappropriate.
It didn't bother me because she's an expert, and they did talk about her being an expert, and she apparently knew about the DNA.
She had seen the reports. Yeah, she had seen the reports.
Yeah. So, and you know, so she knew about it. So although they questioned her about the DNA and she saw the reports, this is inconsistent with the fact that they wouldn't let them cross-examine Welsher about Trooper Paul's report.
I agree.
Because they, you know, Welsher couldn't be, he reviewed Trooper Paul's report, but
he used it.
And he used it.
He put it in his slides.
Yes. But when it comes to this expert, because she reviewed this report about the DNA, they can question her about it. So those rulings were totally inconsistent. And it was, also, yeah, go ahead.
It's even unfair in the fact that Paul is with the Commonwealth, like same team as Welsher, should absolutely be able to be cross-examined on it. This is other team's information. My beef with the DNA is not that she knew about it or didn't know about it. It's that you're putting this, Hank Brennan is stating it as a fact in front of the jury, and the defense never got the opportunity. The Commonwealth could have and should have called the DNA expert like they did the first trial, let the defense hit that credibility. Then when he brings it up, it's been presented to the jury in a fair way. This was not presented to the jury in a fair way, in my opinion.
It didn't bother me. It really didn't that they let her do it. I think it was
except for the inconsistency you're saying.
Right. Yeah. It didn't bother. Right. Her inconsistent rulings bother me.
Right.
But the fact that they asked that question and that she was able to answer it, that didn't bother me. She did do a couple of haymakers, though, and I got to bring up, there's two in particular. One is he allowed her in cross to say there is no medical evidence of an impact. Mm-hmm. That was a big statement by her.
From a medical doctor, because no medical doctor has said differently. Scorti Bello, the defense, or the Commonwealth's Emmy, her, Walsh, that report. No doctor has said there is medical evidence for an impact.
Right. The other haymaker that Brennan allowed her to do was explain the statement, "I hit him."
I knew you were going to bring that up. That was crazy. You're dead if you're Brennan, and that's the worst thing you can do is let her explain the confession.
Your listeners probably can't sympathize, but I can sympathize with Brennan. When I asked that question and I heard that answer, and I had to sit there and listen to her just
act like you're not
destroy
bothered.
My and say, "Oh, okay."
Yeah, exactly. You know? I appreciate that answer, but my exactly.
You know, I mean, come on. Oh, did she do a great job? Oh, under stress, under this, under the they make statements.
What did you say?
You infer your guilt, trying to make yourself guilty for something you're not guilty of. I mean, oh man, it was wonderful. And he let her, he couldn't stop her because he asked the question.
And if you would have, I think this was the part I said that I can't remember. I was like, if a lawyer was ever going to object to his own question or answer, as embarrassing as that is, this might've been worth it because now this is in evidence and the defense can argue this in closing argument that is why we have a medical reason from a medical doctor as to why Karen Reed would be saying the things that she said.
Yeah. So those were haymakers. Those two, if you don't hear those in closing argument, I'll be shocked.
After talking with you again about Russell's testimony, and listening to some of ARCA today, the day we're recording this, I'm starting to come around and just in my own head, understand why the defense is calling less people than maybe we on the outside think they should call, because Russell plus ARCA under 99% of circumstances is a not guilty verdict. Just Russell and ARCA together, that's it. If that's all that they called, that feels like that's enough for reasonable doubt, because it's not impossible, but very, 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 very unlikely this was a car accident, and much more likely this was a dog bite or dog scratch. So how is it not a not guilty verdict? There's just so much other stuff going on in this case. And last time they felt like they didn't present enough, so they wanted to present more evidence this time because they have more. But man, the combination of those two experts, I know it's technically three because it's two for ARCA. That feels like if it was our case, I feel like a lot of times we would just call Russell and just call ARCA and be done.
I tell you what, with me again, just before the trial started, I did not appreciate Russell.
Her testimony was nowhere near as good the first trial and nowhere near as broad. Judge Cannone would not allow her to testify about car accidents. So even though she's clearly an expert in car accident injuries, but now she was not only, because there's a second trial, they did all this voir dire with her. She was able to testify to all the dog bite stuff and all the car accident stuff and the acute trauma that, that Karen Reed was going through. Yeah. So she was much better this time.
Yeah. So I'm saying I didn't appreciate it. Everybody was talking about ARCA. We were talking about the defense, but let me tell you, she is just as valuable, if not more valuable than ARCA. And I got to tell you, you know, she was a home run for him. You know, it's like you said, this is all you need. You shouldn't need more than Russell and ARCA. You know,
right. I mean, that's what I'm really saying. Like a normal trial, just so people know, normal defense lawyers don't put on a week of presentation most of the time. Like it's very rare that we have a week's worth of evidence to put on as a defense attorney. Usually you've got a couple witnesses up and down and you're done. I mean, this is a lot of evidence for, and everybody's thinking, oh, wow, is it really going to be over on Tuesdays? Like that's still, what is that? 6, 7, 8 days of witnesses for the defense. That's a lot for a defense in just about any case.
And I hate to beat a dead horse, but this is why trials are living and breathing is because, you know, this Russell is not the same Russell that testified before. This Russell is not the same Russell that anybody anticipated. This Russell came alive during this trial.
Yeah.
And really came alive during cross. I thought she was fabulous during cross.
Yeah, I agree. Her personality is great. It's just, she's the best. No. Okay. Next was Lucky Loughran. You did also, if you didn't watch the first trial, Lally actually did a really good job, I think, making him seem unsure. Was his view good? Was it bad? He hit this basketball hoop. Lally really highlighted a lot of inconsistencies, and the jury afterwards said, we're not really sure how much credence to put into what Lucky Loughran had to say in the first trial. He didn't really convince us. This time was a different story. What did you think of his testimony about the fact that he said he looked and he was sure nobody, and then at 2:30-ish, then he drives back and there's a Ford Edge there, 3:30-ish, still nobody. What did you think of his testimony?
Well, I thought his direct was really good. I thought his, you know, they had the times, they had went by, you know, he said he could see the front door. So I really thought his direct was really good. The key on him was going to be, how did he handle cross?
Right.
Because we knew what he was going to say on direct. So how does he handle cross? And there were good and bad points in cross. Generally I'd say it's good. But I mean, you know, Brennan got a couple of shots in there. You didn't see the dumpster, but you know, then again, I don't know if you'd notice a dumpster, but I sure think you'd notice a body.
That's what everybody was saying. I mean, I think it was, here's the point. If a jury wants to find a credibility issue in Loughran, I think they would have been like, oh, he should have seen the dumpster. But if not, I don't think it was like some amazing point.
Yeah. And, you know, and also the time thing didn't make a hoot. Again, I don't think the time differences made any difference at all, because this guy started work. He started plowing. And then the cross on the...
Well, hold on. Before we get to the blogger, the timing, Lally did a much better job and Loughran did a much worse job, I felt like, dealing with the timing in the first trial. And that's maybe why I thought his testimony was just significantly better this time, is I don't feel like they chipped away at his credibility one iota with the timing this time. But speaking of things potentially done for the public and other people watching, I had Mark Bedereau on, who represents a blogger. I don't necessarily know if it was the same blogger, I can assume. But Brennan really wanted to make it seem like the blogger that is, connected or friendly to the defense put pressure and threatened to expose Lucky Loughran if he did not testify the way that the defense wanted him to testify. What did you think about that entire line of questioning?
There are several aspects to how I think about that. First off, I think the judge did a terrible job on her rulings on the cross-examination on that. Yes, it's okay to ask some questions. She let it go well beyond anything you should do. First off, if it's something he doesn't know about, then how can you cross-examine him? But she let Brennan ask about stuff. He said, I didn't know he did that. I didn't know he said that. So if you don't know about it, how can it affect your testimony? Number one. Number two, he knew about it, wasn't intimidated by it. That should be the end of the question.
I agree.
That was it. But instead, she let Brennan go overboard on this stuff and spend unbelievable amounts of time. But the more time Brennan spent on it, the less effective it became. Mm-hmm. That's another problem. If you can make your point, make it, don't water it down. And that's exactly what happened. He watered his point down. He should have just said, this guy's a big guy and he came after you, didn't he? And he did it. That was it. Let those points go. But instead, he kept letting Laughlin look stronger and stronger and less intimidated with every question. And he watered down his point. But she did a terrible job of ruling on allowing this in.
Yeah, I think that, again, it's laying the foundation to a bigger point Brennan is trying to say here, which is the defense pressures witness to say what they want him to say. They threaten witnesses to say what they want him to say. But again, he was like, no, I didn't feel threatened. Yeah, it felt nice when people were being nice to me afterwards. I also think, because we know this and we're sensitive to this, you don't want the jury to feel pressure to vote against you, which I feel like is what he's done. Like this blogger in the public, they put a lot of pressure on people to be good for Karen Reed. Do you want the jury sitting over there thinking like, do we really want to vote guilty and deal with that outside pressure?
Yeah. I tell you, like I said, those are my, and then of course the Ford Edge, I think that was kind of a, could be important, could not. I think they
well,
raised
the problem is they haven't talked about it as much this trial.
I know.
Whose Ford Edge was it? Why would it be there at that time? What were they doing? So it's a little bit confusing, but it definitely adds inconsistencies to some of the other people's testimony. And the white Jeep is another inconsistency that's kind of come out that could nuke the Commonwealth's case as well, because if the white Jeep was parked where Jen McCabe says it's parked, there would have been an accident, according to Welcher.
Right. So, I think he did a terrific job. I think there was no reason for the jury not to believe him. That's another kind of key
right.
point. Now, if the jury could say the body was there and he didn't see it, but I don't think the jury is going to say he lied about not seeing a body.
There's 100% agree.
And so I think the jury is going to believe him, in his testimony. They did not hurt his credibility in his testimony. I don't think so.
Yeah, I thought the same thing. If they're going to discount him, they may just say maybe he didn't see it. Maybe it was there and he didn't see it. But I think that's the worst they're going to do to Lucky. I don't think they're going to say he was lying. I agree with you.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go big time on a fancy water bottle with ultra titanium alloy metal. You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water. But you're getting it anyway. Because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save big time. For water bottles. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
All right. And then before we get to ARCA, Mrs. Kolokithas, another Greek, although I don't know if she's Greek, but her husband is. I think Nick was his name. He testified last trial. Good Greek boy. But yep. What did you think of her testimony? Not a home run, but she went, she saw everybody there. She met everybody. She talked to Karen all night. Karen didn't seem drunk. John kissed her on the forehead. They seem like they're in love. And Higgins was looking at them when John kissed her on the forehead, basically.
Yeah. I think that the good thing about her testimony, one thing that I liked about her testimony, is it finally gave the defense the chance to play a video. They really haven't played much video, but they were able to play the video of the kiss on the forehead, to show that. And of course, Miss Kolokithas thought that was the cutest thing she'd ever seen. But I wouldn't have, I mean, maybe I'm wrong. I would not have cared for her to say that she thought Karen was just fine and just fine driving.
Well, because there's been contradictory evidence to that, but I think it's fine to be like, she wasn't plastered out of her mind. Like she had too much to drink, but it's not like she was falling over, slurring her speech. I thought the best thing, tell me what you think of this. I thought the best thing about her was Karen Reed has kind of felt unlikable. Like a lot of people don't like her, John O'Keefe's mom, Jen McCabe, whatever, Carrie Roberts. But this was somebody who wanted to talk to Karen Reed all night. talked to her, liked her, enjoyed her. So she's a likable person. It humanizes Karen Reed a little bit as well.
Yeah. And it also cuts into the theory that, you know, they were having this big fight and she was going to, I mean, the guy just kissed her on the forehead. It was the cutest thing she ever saw. And yet she ran him over or something. She
10 minutes later, like literally 10 minutes later, she's running him over. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously that was the point of putting this witness on.
Yeah. I agree. And I think that it showed that was the only person Brennan basically like didn't cross examine throughout this whole trial. He had like two questions for her and then sat down. So she did no damage to their case, to the defense's case, which is always important. And now Ark is on the stand, starting with Wolf, amazing resume, DOJ. So DOJ contracts, NHL, he works with the NHL. Everybody up there, I'm sure, loves that. But so far, Judge Cannoni has not let them get into how he was hired. All those objections were sustained multiple sidebars, but Jackson has been slipping in the agency that hired you, the third party agency that hired you. He's throwing a lot of that in there to try and still show there was some just unbiased nature of how they started. And then eventually the defense hired them. What are you most, because it's the middle of the testimony right now, so we didn't see all their testimony. What do you think is going to be the most important part of the ARCA testimony?
Well, obviously their conclusion is going to be the most important part, but they're going to have to be more believable than Welcher. And that's not going to be very hard. The bar is not hard. I understand. Again, I know this, just they're doing it right now, but they're already put on PowerPoints. They've already looked more professional and more expert than Welcher. I just think Welcher was
said, like they did the testing they did with the glass and the taillight, the glass would have had been going like 31 to 37 miles an hour to break that taillight. So they're actually starting to give us some evidence about what it takes to break that taillight, which the Commonwealth just completely avoided. And the more they discuss with ARCA things that the Commonwealth completely avoided and did not even talk about, the better. Because those are going to be the questions the jury has. Those are the questions the chat has. That's the question the public has, is how is it possible to shatter that taillight in 50 pieces, not break his arm, but cause those scratch injuries? So those are the questions that are still unanswered.
And what's going to be really interesting is Welcher's testifying, it can testify again, right?
Right, correct.
And so after they're done, the Commonwealth can put Welcher on. It's going to be interesting to see how Welcher is going to compete with ARCA as far as professionalism, as far as technical knowledge, testing, because his direct examination didn't show that. I'm wondering if there's going to be some really shockers when he testifies the second time about all this stuff he's done to combat ARCA's conclusions. And if he's going to be a much better witness the second time than he was the first time.
Here's a question for you. How many times in your career have you had a surrebuttal, like where you're able to go after the state's rebuttal?
It's very rare, and it really... this is not a case when it would happen.
I've never had a case where it's happened. So
it's happened. I've had it happen, but this is not the kind of case, because Welcher knew everything ARCA was going to do, and Welcher could have covered it in direct.
I'm saying is, after the state's rebuttal,
you froze.
Because
there you go. Go ahead.
Okay, after the state's rebuttal, because Welcher's going to come in, and the judge is going to give him more leeway than you're normally allowed on a rebuttal, and because of that, what do you think the chances are the judge may allow the defense to recall ARCA to respond to some of the new things Welcher testifies to? Because that is the defense's case in chief. The defense is supposed to be able to respond to what the state does in their case in chief. So what do you think the chances are, if they want to call ARCA again, that they'd be able to?
I should have listened to you more carefully, obviously, when you asked the question. I think that there's a real good chance. One thing she has done is she has been pretty liberal in her cross, recross,
redirect.
She's been very liberal in that, and she really hasn't cut anybody off. So I think there's a real good chance she's going to allow that. Because again, just seeing what her pattern has been for those kind of questioning and cross-examinate, recrosses and all.
Yeah. I think that's going to be something interesting to follow up on as well. And then we don't know who else the defense is going to call, if anybody, because if Arca's on the stand now, Friday, Monday, is it really going to go 3 days? Do they have somebody else they're going to call? We don't really know. We know the Commonwealth's going to call a couple witnesses. But it really seems like I mean, maybe next week's going to be the last week of evidence and potentially closings. So we could be getting to the case of the jury here any day.
And we already have, they filed this motion for an unavailable witness or whatever
missing witness. Yeah.
So they filed that motion, and that motion includes the people we're talking about. So, you know, obviously that's something that they're.
I feel like she's got to grant that motion, don't you?
Yes. Yeah.
She has to.
Yeah. Because all three of those people, well, we're all three.
Two of them are the third party culprits, and then Proctor.
Yeah. You got Higgins, right. You got Higgins, Proctor.
Higgins, Albert, and Proctor. Albert,
right. So I think there's a good chance she grants it. But I don't know. She's been kind of weird on third party culprit stuff. I mean, she's okay. She's okay on saying somebody else did it, but she's been a little restrictive on actually naming other people who did it.
Yeah.
So, you know, so I don't know.
All right. Anything else before we jump
for
the day?
I think generally I would say it was this has been a good defense case so far, that I think there's been some stumbles, but I certainly think that no matter who the stumble is, Russell overcame every stumble. But I think these were really, really good choices. And you're right that they have. I didn't watch in detail the first trial, but they've tried to make it simpler. And I think that was really a good strategy for them.
Yeah, I completely agree. Maybe changing some order around, I would not have called Dever. I would have called Proctor. That's probably, if I could make one change, that's the change I would make. Personally, just because I think he is so shockingly bad. And when I watched the first trial, I was like, never have I ever felt this way about a cop on the stand before. And I've seen some bad cops. We've cross-examined some bad cops, some jerky cops, some great cops, of course, as well. But I just, that was so shocking to me that I would not have let that pass.
Well, and it's happened to me. And I got to tell you, there are times when I've had cases where I've just wanted a witness so bad. I wanted to put him on. I wanted to get him. I wanted to gut him. I wanted to rip their throat out. And then I had to stop myself and say to myself, is it my personal feeling because I want to put this bad guy on? Or am I really thinking about a guilty and not guilty verdict? So sometimes you've got to hold yourself back and say, what's the best for the overall case? And maybe Proctor's not the best thing to put on for their overall case and the impression and, you know, where they are in the trial and what they want to get for guilt or innocence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's all we got. Next week might be our last before the case is before the jury, or maybe next time we talk, the jury will be deliberating. So we'll see what happens. Make sure everybody subscribes to the YouTube channel, gives us a 5-star review on any podcast platforms you're listening on, put your question in the comments and hit that like button. That's all we got for this week. Till next time, we're out of here. Thanks for watching another episode of The Lawyer You Know. If you enjoyed the episode, please hit the thumbs up and share with your friends who may be interested here on YouTube. And don't forget to subscribe. You can also follow us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and TikTok. And don't forget to check out The Lawyer You Know podcast with new seasons dropping every quarter. If you have a case you want to talk to us about, if it's a personal injury case, wrongful death, catastrophic injury, car accident, or slip and fall case, please email us at lawyeryouknow@gmail.com. And of course, all these links I just mentioned are included in the description below on this episode and every episode. So until next time, this is Peter Tragos, The Lawyer You Know.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.